information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Won't start revolutions, but we're giving it a whirl. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 240 from Media Monarchy. It is Black Friday again, November 25th, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. It is back to Black Friday in the Pepper Spray Nation. Lone Wolf Requiem, World Pressure, and the new Clear Nightmare. Anniversaries, revolutions, and the Buy Nothing Coup, plus food stamp Thanksgiving on Food World Order, Penn State updates on Holy Hexes, virtual flag and utility hacks on cyberspace war, all that and so very much more. Black Friday, November 25th, 2011, episode 240 from Media Monarchy. .com. by Nothing Day. And it is. That's the Go Team. The song is called By Nothing Day from their latest record, Rolling Blackouts. You may recall back in April of this year, we played their track Tornado when there was the largest outbreak in U.S. history of tornadoes in Georgia and Alabama and elsewhere. And I knew back then, going through the record, that there was a track called By Nothing Day. And then I thought, I know that's what I'll play on Black Friday. The lyrics don't seem to overtly mention Adbusters or Buy Nothing Day or consumerism. But I love the Go Team. I love their production style, that overdriven wall of sound, girl group, cheerleader, double Dutch rhymes with fat beats. The Go Team. Ladies and gentlemen, let me once again welcome you more formally to episode 240 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's November 25th, 2011, and my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show at MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alt news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, the website since 9/11/05, and this radio show now just over 5 years old. And we are, as always, broadcasting live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And a huge thanks to all the affiliates out there who help rebroadcast and otherwise spread the word about Media Monarchy, such as the big two, ZeroPointRadio.com. Huge thanks for their simulcast of this live show. As well, the worldwide home of free speech, RevereRadio.net. They also simulcast this show, and they have been since, I believe, about episode 20. So again, a huge thanks to those outlets. KDXRadio.com being one of our more recent affiliates, and we thank them. You can find all our archives in two main spots. RadioForAll.net is where you can get the audio-only and generally lower-quality versions of the shows. Archive.org, however, has the high quality, the low quality, and any video and multimedia presentations. They'll essentially let you upload anything, and I love it. And again, these things are all linked up on the flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com. We always like to tip our hat to the community, TragedyAndHope.com. And again, we'll mention all the social nets, FaceSpace, Twitter, Tube, Tumblr, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword or username. Send your news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com, and we appreciate it. Ever since we took our break a few weeks ago now, as we've struggled to kind of get back on track, the news tips have been invaluable. Speaking of invaluable, your donations help keep Media Monarchy going and growing. Huge thanks yet again to the folks who are return donors to Media Monarchy, like Michael in Santa Clara, California, and Duffy and Ashley in Washington State. And we'll throw in a plug for their LadyGreenJeans.com. They also add the note that we've discussed before and we just haven't taken the time to set it up yet, and that would be a monthly subscription. Hopefully where we could let you set the amount that you'd like to subscribe each month, and PayPal will take it out automatically. I don't know if there's the option to do 5 or 10 or 20 or whatever you want per month. I'd rather let you decide than me set something up and lowball or highball and blah, blah, blah. But this ain't about making money. It's about paying the DJ dues, paying the Skype credit, pay the domain names, all that crap. Because this is essentially independent, non-commercial, alternative media. Some of you may or may not know, I come from a college radio background. I got my chops 89.7 FM in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, WSHC. And when I moved out to the left coast in the years after the catalyzing, catastrophic event of 9/11, I got into alternative history, alternative research, alternative media. And so we use those remixing, chop-up, sound design kind of skills to give you the real news remixed. And again, I appreciate it. I love doing it. I love sharing it with you. And we're going to use this, as we say, as the satellites, if they can stay in the sky, we're going to keep doing this. We're going to keep using the tools in this Gutenberg revolution to spread open source intelligence and the information to learn ourselves forward. Now, my friends, it is Black Friday, as it is known. And you know we always leave a Google News page open to see what's going on in the breaking news world, as sometimes stories can be buried on Friday or big breaking news happens on Friday morning, so we always keep the breaking news page open. And again, as I come to you, it's just 11 minutes after 10 a.m. Pacific time here on November 25th, 2011. So I'm sure the stories will get much, much worse by the time some of you, wherever, whenever you are in the world receiving this transmission, it'll probably get worse before it gets better. Right now, 1 hour ago from Reuters, battle for Black Friday deals include pepper spray and shootings. The holiday shopping season got off to an ugly start with shoppers pepper spraying one another to battle for bargains and robbers shooting shoppers to steal their Black Friday purchases. Some of these things going down in Los Angeles and also somewhere else in California. Thanks, Walmart. Egypt's new prime minister claims more powers, Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals for travelers. And it goes on and on. Some of the other top trending topics are Syria, Joe Biden, Vladimir Putin, and shark attacks. We try and cover everything for you here on Media Monarchy, and that's why we call it that. And we don't want to be glib. I try not to be. We do, as we say, we have to kind of laugh at some of these things to not lose our minds, and we laugh not to cry. But I don't take this lightly. I know I feel like I come away from any kind of media situation going, ow, I could have said that better. I could have been more effective. And that thought struck me after doing the latest episode of New World Next Week. It's the 92nd episode, weekly video series, the weekly video series between myself and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. ClimateGate 2.0, Lone Wolves and Food Stamp Thanksgiving. And we'll blast through these stories, some of which we will and others of which we will not return to in this episode 240. Our first story came from ClimateGate.tv, one of James Corbett's sites in the Corbett Report kingdom. Fresh round of leaked emails called ClimateGate 2.0, and we've got the background and the context and also mainstream and alternative media outlets. More emails leaked from climate researchers. Story number two, NYPD says FBI declined to pursue lone wolf New York City bomb plot. And we also have a related lone wolf, and we'll reference this a little bit later, but we'll just ask right now, who is Oscar Ortega Hernandez, and why did he allegedly try to kill Obama? Related to the lone wolves, as these seem to swirl around, of course, the 48th anniversary of an American coup. Recently, James Corbett, on his weekly live, not weekly, daily live radio show on the Republic Broadcasting Network, went in search of Lee Harvey Oswald with Charles Ocelli, the blind JFK researcher. You can get more at youtube.com/blindJFK. And our third story, which we will get into later in this episode, Oregon tops the nation in food stamp use. And we do have the related report out of Eugene, Oregon from KEZI Channel 9. And the related story, USDA targets stores in food stamp trafficking. And I reference wanting to do better. I feel like I don't want to come away talking about Oregon and talking about food stamps and talking about people or West Virginia or welfare or any of that kind of stuff and take it lightly and be glib and not recognize that I'm lucky and I work at a food place. But not everybody's like that. But I think I have always made the conscious effort to have my jobby job be something food related. Would I like to work at a newspaper, radio station, something like that? you know, in my field, would I have a piece of paper that says I'm good at? A degree? But I don't think they can pay me enough to make me forget that it would probably suck to work for a corporate place that could pay my bills. And I've always liked having my jobby job, pays my bills, and then I can do this myself. No strings attached, no money involved. I can't eat promo CDs. But I digress, my friends. That's the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, which leads us to the latest episode and all the other alternative media from CorbettReport.com. Episode 209, the latest entry in the recurring series Requiem for the Suicided. This time, Danny Casolaro, freelance journalist who told his friends and family that he was close to cracking a story that he called the Octopus, which he referred to as the political conspiracy of the century. In August of 1991, he packed his notes and headed to West Virginia to conduct some final interviews for his forthcoming book. On August 10th, 1991, he was found dead in his hotel room. The death was immediately ruled a suicide. Episode 209, Requiem for the Suicided, goes in search of the story behind the story of the mysterious death of Danny Casolaro. Now, all my favorite alternative media hosts that we try and promote and spread the word about here, I love that they include bibliography and source documentation. So, episode 209 has all the documentation and sources for the Danny Casolaro episode, which references something I had actually forgotten about. My interview with Albert Lanier on Danny Casolaro and the Octopus, and on that archive.org page, which we have linked up for you here in the show notes, has all the other related multimedia that I've been able to find that I put on archive.org, and that includes the Unsolved Mysteries segment with Robert Stack, and any other bits of media that are all related to this. And I believe, in my last conversation with James, that this is a part one, and that there will be a part two getting further into the Octopus. Some of the other latest and greatest audios and videos from CorbettReport.com, the Boot Enigma. That would be Victor Boot. And that's the eye-opener preview. Arab League suspends Syria, and we ask, what is next? The latest Fukushima update from November 15th. FukushimaUpdate.com being another of the newest sites in the Corbett Report kingdom. China, the U.S., and the Cold War, Global Research Television Behind the Headlines video, and War with Iran, History and Consequences. Also, the latest interviews with Bob Chapman, Wayne Madsen, Julian Teal, and Pepe Escobar. All that and so very much more from CorbettReport.com. And we referenced the community at TragedyAndHope.com earlier, and we now have episode 44 of PeaceRevolution.org, the number one higher education show on Podomatic. Episode 44 is part four of the ultimate history lesson, and that is the forthcoming massive multimedia package coming from Peace Revolution and TragedyAndHope.com, featuring a weekend with John Taylor Gatto. I believe episode 5 will be coming very, very soon, as will the show notes for the already posted episode 44. And again, as I referenced the source links, it does take a good bit of time to get all that together and include that for people. So, again, your patience and understanding is appreciated on all levels of independent alternative media. Again, we're all existing on the kindness of strangers, essentially. Our third and final blast of related alternative media this week, Ground Zero, my man Clyde Lewis, weeknights 9 to midnight on KXL 101.1 FM here in Portland, Oregon, with the links to listen and subscribe to the daily podcast, the daily articles, and now almost a daily behind-the-scenes Ground Zero TV video. And we also have their Twitter links at Clyde Lewis and at KXL News. The latest articles and videos, Demonolatry, changeling exposing a cambion. And Clyde always busts out these words that I think, that can't be a real thing. He made that up. And I look it up, and there is something about it. Cambion being something to do with head scars. And that behind-the-scenes video from November 21st on Ground Zero TV, Cambion Scars, and that C-A-M-B-I-O-N, asked the question, why does Obama and Prince Harry and Kate Middleton and all these folks have these weird head scars? Bracing for nuclear winter, Cold War 2.0, and the nuclear nightmare, or nuclear nightmare. All that and so much more from my man Clyde Lewis at groundzeromedia.org. And we'll transition now into everything else posted to the flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com, and we'll begin with what was originally called, as we've noted this before, and we always try and remind you, watch how the language changes, watch how they use it, watch how the stories get molded and spun. It was called the Super Congress first, and I've always thought that that name must have been much too telling, and it was kind of scrubbed from the nomenclature of the mainstream media, and it just became the Debt Committee. Super Congress Debt Committee, an unsurprising fail. Deficit Super Committee officially admits failure, and we have three mainstream media bits from CNN, The Washington Times, and First Forbes. In a statement released after the bell, the so-called Budget Deficit Super Committee officially announced it failed to produce $1.2 trillion in budget cuts over the next decade. Their failure, anticipated by many, led to a substantial market plunge on Monday and will supposedly trigger the automatic sequester proposition, which is designed to enact $1.2 trillion in cuts evenly split between defense and domestic spending. From the Washington Times, destined to fail super committee completely fails. For the uninitiated, America is drowning in debt. Barack Obama is piling on debt at an exponential rate while blaming everybody else for refusing to balance the books while he spins America into bankruptcy. And like so many levels, that is correct, but the attention deficit disorder in this nation can only remember back far enough to blame that previous puppet. But it's a seamless transition. They pass off the nuclear football. They pass off the bailouts. Hand in hand. Poppy Bush says Clinton's like a son to him. Obama's related to Cheney and Dracula and all of those things. Again, these are the shadows on the wall. These are the characters. And we try not to pay too much attention to their every bit of minutia, but we definitely want to shine the light on anything that exposes this phony left-right political paradigm. I think that's always been one of the main focuses of this show. Third one from CNN. It's official. The Congressional Debt Committee is over. To no one's surprise, the bipartisan panel called it quits on Monday without reaching any agreement on debt reduction, let alone the $4 trillion grand bargain. And we provide a link for more research on Obama's $4 trillion grand bargain. As, again, we enjoy the language. We always want to, again, shine a light on the language of the grand bargain and the automatic sequester propositions. The bipartisan panel called it quits on Monday without reaching any agreement on debt reduction, let alone the $4 trillion grand bargain that budget experts say is needed at a minimum to get a handle on the country's long-term fiscal problems. The hope, of course, was that the super committee, given extraordinary and unprecedented powers, would tackle the tough problems facing the country's budget, such as rising health costs and an unwieldy tax code no one likes. I'm so surprised, folks like John Kerry and others with their journalism degrees and law degrees and law degrees and law degrees. The last bit from the economiccollapseblog.com. Epic failure. The super committee was indeed a super joke. And let's get a MSM blast just to break this story down.
It is finger-pointing time in Washington. The Congressional Deficit Reduction Committee says just can't do it. They cannot reach a deal.
Joining us right now to talk about the battle is Republican Congressman Brian Bilbray. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, I just asked, what are we going to do about this? You said you're going to work from now until Christmas.
Well, what happens is that now you got basically the plan to sequester, which will force us that if you don't want to accept that, you darn well better work between now. And first of all, till Christmas. Mm-hmm. If we, right now they're telling us don't plan on coming home until Christmas Eve. And we may not even do that if it gets really get ugly. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of having to sit down and work out all these details because they were hoping this super committee could create this miracle of putting it all together. But I guess the biggest issue is the countdown's coming. You've got another debt issue coming up. And the days of just raising the debt limit are over with. I think everybody's got the wake-up call that now, between now and late January, you darn well better start addressing this because this whole thing's going to come back to bite. This is not something Congress can walk away from.
And it seems like everyone's just really frustrated right now because you said the super committee was formed to fix this problem. The president is blaming the Republicans. The Republicans are blaming the Democrats. I mean, who really cares if who's at fault? When is this going to get done?
Well, let me just say, I was really surprised that Toomey, somebody who is perceived, and I would call him a very right-winger, was offering tax increases up to $300 billion. I mean, that surprised me that that gesture was there. I was kind of shocked that nobody kind of responded to that. And let me just say something about leadership. Look, I've been a mayor. I've been chairman of the county. If I was the president, instead of going out and making speeches and going around the country campaigning, I would have shocked the Congress by going to their office. I would have gone to the freshmen. And you imagine if the president was seen going out and meeting congressmen and walking the halls of Congress and saying, I want to work with you, but this is what I need you to do. What do you need me to do? That face-to-face discussion. You didn't see that. Yeah. You saw speeches out of the White House and around the country. But the work needs to be done in Washington. That's why we fly for 5 hours back there, sit down, go face-to-face, and talk human to human. Not Democrat to Republican, but human to human that, look, this is our grandchildren's future we're talking about. There's no left and right here. There's just the American future that we've got to be working on.
That was some of the criticism of the president, as he was a no-show during much of this going on.
Well, you're actually hearing that complaint from both sides. You can see Chris Matthews that was saying, look, Mr. President, we need a leader, not just the speech. And he's, when you got somebody like Chris Matthews calling it down, yeah. And frankly, I understand the president has come in. He doesn't have experience doing this. He's got to learn hard. But boy, I'll tell you, you can't just be a good talker. You got to remember, this is about human beings trying to get together and work for the future of their grandchildren. Then you can't do that speaking at each other or speaking, being 300 miles away or 1,000 miles away talking about somebody. You need to be going, looking them straight in the eye and saying, let's work together. And when you look somebody in the eye, it's a little harder to call them an SOB and say how terrible they are because you see the humanity that both sides have. And I think that's the biggest thing we need to work out between now and Christmas. Hopefully, brotherly love may show up, but I won't plan on it.
I remember, isn't that how Congress started at the beginning of the year? It was the brotherly love and we're going to work together, the bipartisanship spirit. Where'd that go?
Oh, the humanity. Let's get our related econocrash updates from ZeroHedge.com. U.S. economic conditions are terrifying. Mohammed El Arian, economist, gets into the chances of recession in the U.S. are 50-50. Meanwhile, from the New York Times, postal chief seeks ability to cut costs to stem losses as we've been tracking the destruction of the postal service. Meanwhile, MF Global revelations keep getting worse. One of the most outrageous and brazen abuses of customers by Wall Street insiders that we have seen. So little attention by the mass media, of course, shows you what's really going on. MF Global, worse than Madoff. It was not a Ponzi scheme. The customers were not betrayed by a fraud. Rather, within an officially sanctioned system overseen by the government and the guarantees of a major global exchange and the regulators of the markets of the nation, their property was confiscated, stolen and stole, and then stolen again by the creditors and criminals who conceal it and attempt to claim it as their own. This article, Janet Tavakoli writes, and it's on jessiescrossroadscafe.blogspot.com, MF Global revelations keep getting worse. And I believe there's also a note about there was, a hack attack or, a fake customer hack attack days before the revelations about Corzine and MF Global that essentially they hacked everybody's addresses and stole the copper wiring before the place went down a couple days later. Maurice R. Greenberg, Hammer and Hank Greenberg, the former chief executive of the American International Group, sued the United States Treasury and the Federal Reserve Bank of New York this past Monday, contending that their takeover of the insurer in the fall of 2008 was improper and that the Fed breached its duty to AIG shareholders when it unwound the company's disastrous bets on mortgage securities. And we'll end our related econocrash notes with what is it, Schadenfreude, shameful joy. Foreclosure lawyers who dressed as homeless people are now jobless people. Foreclosure firm Stephen J. Baum to close down. Remember that firm of remorseless foreclosure lawyers who dressed up as homeless evictees for Halloween? Sure you do. Well, here's some good news. In time for Thanksgiving, they're all out of a job. In the wake of the New York Times story revealing photos of the outlandishly insensitive Halloween party at the Steve J. Baum, B-A-U-M, law firm, both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac cut off the foreclosure mill firm, which now has to close down. The head of the company even sent a whistleblowing Times columnist, Joe Nocera, an angry email saying, quote, "There's blood on your hands for this one. I will never, ever forgive you for this." And I'm sure that sentiment cuts both ways. We go from the econo crash, which is not just in Oregon, which is not just in America, which is worldwide. And we go from the worldwide econo crash to the worldwide grand chessboard and the geopolitical situation. World pressure mounts as Cairo clashes continue. This posted 2 days ago to MediaMonarchy.com from the Columbia Broadcasting System and the Associated Press. International criticism of Egypt's military rulers mounted as police clashed for a fifth day this past Wednesday, November 23rd, with protesters demanding the generals relinquish power immediately. A rights group raised the death toll for the wave of violence to at least 38. At least 2,000 protesters have been wounded, mostly from gas inhalations or injuries caused by rubber bullets fired by the army and the police.
The United Nations has condemned the killing of pro-democracy protesters by Egypt's military rulers. Its human rights chief called the use of force excessive and demanded an independent investigation. Crowds in Cairo and other Egyptian cities want the army to stand down now and be replaced with an interim civilian government. Many have gathered at the capital's Tahrir Square, repeating scenes from the revolution that forced ex-president Hosni Mubarak to stand down in February. Tear gas has been used to break up the demonstrations, but activists say the police are also firing live rounds. The clashes broke out at the weekend. At least 37 people have died and nearly 2,000 have been injured. Parliamentary elections begin Monday, but demonstrators want a presidential poll to be held afterwards. They fear the army is trying to buy time to protect its political and economic interests so it can retain a say in how Egypt is governed in the future.
So as we briefly mentioned before, 40 minutes ago from the Associated Press, Egypt's new prime minister claims more powers. Egypt's military rulers picked a prime minister from ousted leader Hosni Mubarak's era to head the government in a move quickly rejected by tens of thousands of protesters, while the United States ratcheted up pressure on the generals to quickly transfer power to a civilian leadership. I did not actually see the clip, but I had a coworker telling me someone had put together a compilation or a mashup edited video of Obama speaking about what needs to be done in Egypt with cutaways of our own situation here in the States with Occupy and otherwise. Pot, kettle, black. You get it. Our related geopolitical updates, Yemen president of 33 years to quit amid uprising. That would be the fourth leader to lose power in the wave of quote-unquote Arab Spring. Yemen's autocratic leader agreed Wednesday to step down after months of demonstrations against his 33-year rule, pleasing the U.S. and its Gulf allies who feared that collapsing security in the impoverished nation was allowing an active al-Qaeda franchise to step up operations. President Ali Abdullah Saleh, S-A-L-E-H, is the fourth leader to lose power in the wave of Arab Spring uprisings this year, following longtime dictators in Tunisia, Egypt, and Libya. And we'll note, again, on the Arab Spring, Adrian Salbrucci, writing for Russia Today, notes that Arab Spring is not as spontaneous as the Western mainstream media would have us believe. Of course, there are many behind-the-scenes manipulators and actions happening, as you should expect on any number of levels. Our last geopolitical update from Rupert Murdoch's Sky News. Iran arrests 12 CIA agents planning attacks. Iran claims to have arrested 12 CIA agents and accused them of planning to strike at Iranian interests. IRNA, I-R-N-A, state media quoted an influential politician as saying that the agents were working in collusion with Israel. Parviz Sorori, who sits on the powerful Foreign Policy and National Security Committee, said the spy network aimed to damage Iran's security, military, and nuclear sectors, saying, quote, the U.S. and Zionist regime's espionage apparatuses were trying to damage Iran from both inside and outside with a heavy blow using regional intelligence services. What wild accusations. Does he have any historical references to back up that story? It's not like we know that Israel created Stuxnet to attack nuclear plants and experiments and research in Iran that they claim is peaceful, which the IAEA has said is peaceful, and there's no evidence of a nuclear program. But if Israel says you have nukes and you have weapons of mass destruction, well, one, we know it because generally we'll have the receipts. But two, we can't have that. We can only have one undeclared nuclear rogue state in the Middle East. That job is taken. We return to our own North American Union. And again, we covered this story on the latest NewWorldNextWeek.com. NYPD says FBI declined to pursue a lone wolf New York City bomb plot.
Yesterday afternoon, New York City police officers arrested a 27-year-old Al-Qaeda sympathizer who was plotting to bomb police patrol cars and also postal facilities, as well as targeted members of our armed forces returning from abroad. Jose Pimentel, P-I-M-E-N-T-E-L, of Washington Heights, which is in the northern end of Manhattan, faces terrorism-related charges. The suspect was a so-called lone wolf. Motivated by his own resentment of the presence of American troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as inspired by Al-Qaeda propaganda, he was not part of a larger conspiracy emanating from abroad. He represents exactly the kind of threat FBI Director Robert Mueller and his experts have warned about, as American military and intelligence agencies have eroded Al-Qaeda's ability to launch large-scale attacks.
Our office today filed charges against Jose Pimentel of Manhattan for conspiring to build a bomb for terrorist purposes and for possessing a weapon, a pipe bomb, that he is alleged to have intended to use to wage his campaign of violence. The defendant stated his belief in violent jihad and harbored a violent ideology.
Yeah, but meanwhile, the FBI concluded that the 27-year-old Pimentel, quote, didn't have the predisposition or the ability to do anything on his own, end quote. And something else I reference is, again, we covered this on New World Next Week. I said that this lone wolf, of course, as they said, oh, watch out for lone wolf, watch out for lone wolf. Then, lo and behold, we have lone wolf arrests. Problem, reaction, solution, predictive programming. Call it what you will. But that this all happened around the 48th anniversary of an American coup, which we will get into in just one moment. And I said, oh, well, it all goes back to the original lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald. And that is and is not correct. And thanks to one comment below our lone wolf post here, gets into other mentally challenged or retarded threats to peace and security, like Lee Harvey Oswald, the quote-unquote Kennedy assassin, Mansour al-Babsiar, who we just recently discussed in the Saudi Arabian envoy assassination plot, Richard Reed, the quote-unquote shoe bomber, Abdul Muttalab, the quote-unquote underwear bomber. Who's their great inspiration, you may ask? Now, of course, the mainstream media will tell you it's Awlaki, who Obama, of course, recently just extrajudiciously assassinated abroad, even though he's an American citizen. And we know that he dined at the Pentagon after 9/11 because that's how the phony Al-Qaeda database works. But that's not the real inspiration, whether they know it or not. Maybe it really does go back to Marinus Vanderlube. That would be the patsy blamed for burning down the Reichstag, even though we know the Nazis did it themselves, to blame it on their opposition. At some point, in the history of this show, I believe there was a release from Germany saying after decades and decades and generations that they had exonerated Marinus van der Lubbe, saying of course he didn't burn down the Reichstag. Of course the Nazis did it themselves. False flags from then to now. And I think something that the alternative media has tried so very hard to do with amazing amounts of success is explain and show people what false flag terrorism is. Pulling off an attack yourself while wearing the costume of your enemy so they get the blame. Like hitting your own gang. Get it? So we reach yet another post in the now growing archives of MediaMonarchy.com. This time it is the 48th anniversary of an American coup. And we have three different stories to get into the anniversary. From the Associated Press, quote-unquote lost JFK assassination tapes have been found, and they are, of course, on sale. A long-lost version of the Air Force One recordings made in the immediate aftermath of President John F. Kennedy's assassination, with more than 30 minutes of additional material not in the official version in the government's archives, has been found and is for sale. You can get more on that story from CNN and NDTV.com. Meanwhile, press release from CisionWire.com. New book indicts CIA in Kennedy assassination. New York Times number one best-selling author and JFK historian Mark Lane tried the only U.S. court case in which jurors concluded that the CIA plotted the murder of President Kennedy, but there were always missing pieces. How did the CIA control Dallas police and Secret Service agents on the ground in Dealey Plaza? How did federal authorities prevent the Warren Commission and the House Select Committee on Assassinations from discovering the truth about the complicity of the CIA? Now Lane tells all in his explosive new book called Last Word, My Indictment of the CIA in the Murder of JFK, with exclusive new interviews, sworn statements, and meticulous new research, including interviews with Oliver Stone, Dallas Police Deputy Sheriffs, Robert K. Tannenbaum, and Secret Service Agent Abraham Bolden. Lane finds out firsthand exactly what went on the day JFK was assassinated. And I would imagine that the title, Last Word, has dual meaning. In that one, it would be the last word on the subject of intelligence involvement in the catalyzing catastrophic event of the assassination of JFK. King Kill 33, if you will. But it could also be a reference to Mark Lane not getting any younger. I believe he pretty much had the first book about the Kennedy assassination, Rush to Judgment. If not the first, it was, of course, the first really well-known. Not to be forgotten, however, is his book Plausible Denial that does get in more to Howard Hughes, E. Howard Hunt, and the Central Intelligence Agency. But our third and final story related to the 48th anniversary of an American coup is just a quick blurb on the New York Times, and it's in their opinion section, and it is written by famed documentarian Errol Morris. You may know him as the director of The Thin Blue Line, Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control, The Fog of War, Dr. Death, Heaven's Gate. Those are off the top of my head. But he has a piece called The Umbrella Man. And he writes, "For years I've wanted to make a movie about the John F. Kennedy assassination. Not because I thought I could prove that it was a conspiracy or that I could prove it was a lone gunman, but because I believe that by looking at the assassination, we can learn a lot about the nature of investigation and evidence. Why, after 48 years, are people still quarreling and quibbling about this case? What is it about this case that has led not to a solution, but to the endless proliferation of possible solutions? Years ago, Josiah Thompson, known as Tink Thompson, a young Yale-educated Kierkegaard scholar, quit his day job as a professor of philosophy at Haverford College to write the definitive book on the Zapruder film, 6 Seconds in Dallas. Tink became a private detective and came to work with many of the same private investigators I had also worked with in the 80s. Probably, again, going back to Errol Morris's landmark work, The Thin Blue Line. We had so much in common, philosophy, private investigation work, and an obsessive interest in the complexities of reality, but we had never met. Last year, I finally got to meet and interview Tink Thompson. I hope his interview can become the first part of an extended series on the Kennedy assassination. This film is but a small segment of my six-hour interview with Tink Thompson, and it's called The Umbrella Man. So there's more from the New York Times, and it essentially looks like this is just a short that's running at some small event in New York City, but hopefully we'll get a chance very soon to check out Errol Morris's The Umbrella Man and hope very much that it does become a series. Folks like Josiah Thompson have been featured on blackopradio.com, who you've heard us reference and recommend that show on this show from the very beginning. The Umbrella Man is seen in the footage taken around Dealey Plaza that as the motorcade approaches, as it takes the illegal left turn, lowering its speed to below standard operating protocol, while the windows were open against standard operating procedure. There's a guy with an umbrella on an unseasonably warm and beautiful day in Dallas who obviously is signaling and doing something with his umbrella, taking it out, opening it, spinning it around, doing some type of signs and signals. The Umbrella Man. My friends, we have one final post on the flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com, and you know it. It's the news purge. But before we get into it, let's take a quick musical break with the French band known as M83, Midnight City. That track is called Midnight City, and it is the lead single from the brand new album Hurry Up, We're Dreaming from the French group known as M83. Their audacious, grandiose new double album, Hurry Up, We're Dreaming, has been a surprise success, and they were actually here in Portland back on the 11th with a sold-out show at the Wonder Ballroom, which is a much bigger venue than the place that my girlfriend and I saw M83 a couple years ago here in Portland. We've now reached the 11:24 news purge, where we take our line, "Won't Start Revolutions, But We're Giving It a Whirl." That was from our opening track, "By Nothing Day," from the Go Team. The news purge is going to be fast and furious, my friends. But first, an informative lead-in as we begin, as we generally do, with our 9/11 updates. We haven't discussed too many times Ron Paul in this new campaign. Longtime listeners know we were an ardent supporter of the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul in the 2008 campaign, which we began discussing in 2006 and 7 on this show. Now, essentially, he seems to be in third place, and I heard that from my dad, which hopefully shows, again, my dad and family still being in southern West Virginia, that Ron Paul, and more importantly, his ideas, are getting out to mainstream, mainline America, who looks at all these other fools and says, "I don't want any of these guys. They're all a bunch of liars." And you know, if Ron Paul was going to be smeared with some kind of sex scandal or money scandal, they would have done it already, and you can look at him and know that it ain't going to happen. Ron Paul has said this time and time again, and yes, he's been a bit of a Judas to the 9/11 truth movement, who gave him so much. I don't think it's an overstatement to say that Ron Paul's campaign was made from alternative media, 9/11 truth, InfoWars, and the whole libertarian scene. He has said time and time again, it's our policies that led to 9/11. But somehow it's always, "Oh my God, I can't believe you said that." And he said it again at a recent GOP debate. But let's break it down with the old man, Bob Schieffer, from the Columbia Broadcasting System, on Ron Paul and our flawed policies and 9/11.
We begin this morning with Congressman Ron Paul. The polls, Mr. Paul, suggest that you are now in the thick of it out in Iowa, basically in a statistical tie with Romney, with Kaine, and with Mr. Gingrich. So I want to ask you some questions now that you're among the front runners. We need to know more about your positions on the issues. And I want to start with foreign policy, because your statements over the years, posted on your website and elsewhere, some of the things you have said in the debates, suggests that you believe that 9/11 happened because of actions that the United States took. Is that correct?
Well, I think there's an influence, and that's exactly what the 9/11 Commission said. That's what the DOD has said, and that's also what the CIA has said, and that's what a lot of researchers have said. And just remember, immediately after 9/11, we removed the base from Saudi Arabia. So there is a connection. That doesn't do the whole full explanation, but our policies definitely had an influence. And you talk to the people who committed it and those individuals who would like to do us harm, they say, yes, we don't like American bombs to be falling on our country, and we don't like the intervention that we do in their nations. So to deny this, is, I think, is very dangerous. But to argue the case that they want to do us harm because we're free and prosperous, I think is a very, very dangerous notion, because it's not true.
Well, I would question the import of what some of those commissions found that you cited there. But basically, what you are saying, Mr. Paul, is that it was America's fault, that 9/11 happened, and it was our fault that it happened.
No, I think that's a misconstruing of what I'm saying, because America is you and I, and we didn't cause it. The average American didn't cause it. But if you have a flawed policy, it may influence it. When Ronald Reagan went into Lebanon, he deeply regretted this, because he said if he'd have been more neutral, those Marines wouldn't have died in Lebanon, because the policy was flawed. The same thing that McNamara said after the Vietnam War. He wrote in his memoirs that, you know, if he would have changed, if we don't learn from our policies, it won't be worth anything. So I'm saying policies have an effect, but that's a far cry from blaming America. Well, I mean, in America, you're supposed to be able to criticize your own government. You're supposed to be able to criticize your own government without saying you're un-American.
But
that's what the implication is.
But what you are saying, it was the government's fault. That That basically is what you are saying. Let me move on to from something else.
I'm saying the policymaker's fault.
The policymaker's
fault. Contributed
to
it.
All right.
Contributed to it.
Let me ask you this. Am I correct that your idea of how to discourage Iran from building nuclear weapons is to be nicer to Iran's leaders? Is that correct?
Well, I think to be, we have 12,000 diplomats. I'm suggesting that maybe we ought to use some of them. But just think of how we prevented a nuclear war with the Soviets when the Soviet missiles were put in Cuba. We didn't say we're going to attack you. Kennedy and Khrushchev talked, and they made a deal. You take your weapons out of Cuba, we'll take them out of Turkey. That's the kind of talk that I want. I think the greatest danger now is for us to overreact. And this is what I'm fearful of. Iran doesn't have a bomb. There's no proof. And there's no new information, regardless of this recent report. And for us to overreact and talk about bombing Iran, that's much more dangerous. We got the Libyans to get rid of their nuclear power and their nuclear weapons. And look at what happened to them.
Mr. Paul,
understand that.
May I interrupt just for a second? No one has suggested in the U.S. government that we are going to bomb Iran. What they have said is that we're going to impose very tough sanctions. You are against sanctions on Iran. Is that correct?
Yeah, because sanctions are the initial step to war. I was opposed to all the sanctions for 10 years and the bombing that was occurring with Iraq because I said it would lead to war. But if you say nobody's suggesting it, why don't you listen to the debates?
Mr. Paul, may I correct you? I am listening to the debates. I know there have been some candidates who've talked about that, including Mr. Romney. The United States government has not said we're going to bomb Iran. I mean, That's just a fact.
No, obviously they haven't said that, but the implication is nothing is off the table. You've heard those statements.
Well, yes. All right. Let's move on then. Do you think there is any place in the world where United States forces should be stationed? You've talked about bringing them home from Afghanistan, from Iraq. Is there any place where you think it helps us to have U.S. forces stationed?
No, other than the fact that I think a submarine is a very worthwhile weapon, and I believe we can defend ourselves with submarines and all our troops back at home. This whole idea that we have to be in 130 countries and 900 bases, now they've just invented a weapon that can hit any spot in the world in 1 hour. What's this idea? This is old-fashioned idea that you have to keep troops on 900 bases around the world. It makes no sense at all. Besides, we're bankrupt. We can't afford it anymore.
So you would, if you were president, you'd bring home the troops from Japan, you'd bring home the troops from South Korea? You would.
Okay. Absolutely, and the people are with me on that because we can't afford it. It would save us a lot of money. All those troops would spend their money here at home, and besides, those troops overseas aggravate our enemies, motivate our enemies. I think it's a danger to our national defense, and we can save a lot of money cutting out the military expenditures that contribute nothing to our defense.
All right, let me ask you about some domestic things. Your plan to get the country back on a firm financial footing is to close, including, among other things, the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, Commerce, Interior, Housing and Urban Development. You would cut back the federal workforce by 10%. You've also suggested we should close FEMA, which is the Emergency Management Agency. I have to ask you this. What do you do about all the things that those agencies control, run, supervise? For example, what happens to the national parks if you close the Department of the Interior? Do we just let them go by the by or what?
No way. And the program deals with this. There's transition funds, but we would like to see a lot of land sold off, but we're not going to just ignore the parks. No, not at all. I mean, the money isn't there. These are departments that are doing too much. The American people are sick and tired of our educational system. Just think of how we've been involved and give out loans, and we educate students. The cost of education goes up. They graduate. They don't have jobs, and they have $1 trillion worth of debt. We have to question that. This country's in bankruptcy. We have to deal with it. We can't remain in denial. And that is my argument. And believe me, this is why I'm getting a good reception on the campaign trail.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for coming on this morning and for answering the questions. Ron Paul, thanks for being here this morning.
Third place, provocative questions, slippery slopes, my friends. Ron Paul says flawed policies helped lead to 9/11, and that is how we began our 9/11 updates, all three of which coming from 9/11blogger.com. The second, an amazing bit of an amazing bit of research from Shoestring on 9/11. The U.S. military was preparing for simulated nuclear war, just one of the dozen-plus terror drills and war games going on simultaneously. Our final 9/11 update, the curious case of United Airlines Flight 23.
Now, we all know too well about the four planes that were used as missiles on that September 11th, 10 years ago. But you probably have not heard about United Flight 23.
That's right, a plane that was only minutes from being in the air on 9/11, a plane that some believe could have become a fifth missile. Jay Korf rejoins us live now from the Pentagon with this story. Jay?
Allison, you know, we spoke with that flight's first officer, the co-pilot. We also spoke with an author who says that she uncovered a stunning revelation, that there were additional terrorists on that flight and on other planes on September 11th.
Their faces and their shameful deeds have been etched into our nation's collective conscience. But ABC 7 News has learned that the 19 men who used planes as missiles may not have been the only terrorists aboard commercial flights on that dark day in September. It's information the FBI will not confirm. You won't find it in the 9/11 Commission report. But the Brigadier General and a former pilot are talking.
I don't think many people know about those men on board United 23 or about the items that were found.
And they went running off the airplane, never to be seen again. So, yes.
On September 11th, Brigadier General Carol Timmons of the Delaware Air National Guard was co-piloting United Flight 23, heading from JFK to Los Angeles. But while in line to take off, air traffic controllers closed the airport, and she received a dire message.
Hijackings. We've had hijackings. You know, secure the cockpit. Either land or get back to the terminal. So as we turn to taxi back, we can see the towers on fire. I can close my eyes and see it today. So it was horrendous. It's horrendous.
To add to her angst, she received a chilling call.
In the meantime, as we're taxiing back, flight attendant says, "Hey, I've got some very agitated men sitting in first class. They're very unhappy. Why aren't we taking off? Why aren't we taking off?"
But once at the gate, the men disappeared into the sea of people evacuating JFK.
There's the generally held belief that there were other planes out there.
Former commercial pilot Lynn Spencer wrote touching history, a minute-by-minute account of the air drama that unfolded on 9/11. She says high-ranking FAA officials and airport managers have confirmed to her that during a search of United Flight 23, box cutters and Al-Qaeda documents were discovered in unclaimed bags.
It was believed by those who searched the plane and found these items that they were indeed hijackers on that flight.
Spencer says federal officials believe not just one, but several additional planes were carrying terrorists on September 11th. But since the FAA shut down U.S. airspace, those twisted minds never hit their targets.
I think we are all aware of how horrible September 11th was. Can we really imagine if another 8, 9, 10 planes had also been successful?
General Timmons also confirms to ABC 7 News that she and her crew were interviewed a number of times by FBI agents, but we have to point out that FBI officials have declined to respond to any of our questions relating to other terrorists, potential terrorists, aboard other planes on September 11th. Live at the Pentagon, Jay Korf, ABC 7 News.
Just three more bits of evidence adding to the overwhelming conclusion that we need a new independent investigation of 9/11. Continuing our November 24th news purge, won't start revolutions, but we're giving it a whirl. We get to BioWars and EnviroHealth updates. Scientists mutate bird flu to make it more contagious. This is from the Daily Mail, and critics claim the bioweapon must be kept secret. We've noted time and time again the role of the labs. Create the disease that can be let go in some sort of accident or drill. And then you have the pharmaceutical industrial complex that can sell you the antidote that sometimes might even work. Meanwhile, Merck pays $950 million for their illegal marketing and dangerous Vioxx drug, but of course, no jail time. And our last EnviroHealth note has a video that you should check out. It was nothing to play audio-wise, but octopus crawls out of water and walks on dry land. Add this to all our bizarre animal events that we've tracked essentially from January 1st, 2011, with all of the mass animal die-offs. But while keeping the pharmaceutical industrial complex in mind, we move to our drug war updates. And note that 1 in 5 American adults take psychiatric drugs. We can get that from Fox News, and we can get that from Macon.com, but it's from the Associated Press. More than 20% of American adults took at least one drug for conditions like anxiety and depression in 2010, according to an analysis of prescription data, including more than 1 in 4 women. The New York Times reports medical marijuana the target of U.S. prosecutors. Danger Room reporting Pentagon's war on drugs goes mercenary. Meanwhile, Washington Examiner gets into the Mexican drug war raging on as the U.S. focuses on Afghanistan. New rhetoric, same old drug war policies as the drug czar addresses an African-American community. That piece from Tony Newman on Huffington Post. And finally on alibongo.co.uk with the hat tip to Civ in London. Police raid shock. They raided the cannabis cup in the Netherlands. Two brief notes on history mystery, and the first we could have added along with our 48th anniversary of an American coup with the JFK assassination, but another massive, documented, well-researched piece from Peter Dale Scott on globalresearch.ca, The Doomsday Project and Deep Events, JFK, Watergate, Iran-Contra, and 9/11. The other history mystery note is from the Associated Press. And as I've looked back in the archives, I saw we used to play a lot of these Today in History videos. Now, I realize we are broadcasting and recording on November 25th, but the day in history for November 24th was pretty fascinating.
24th, 1963. In Dallas, a scene caught on live TV that shocks America just days after the assassination of President John F. Kennedy.
There is a young boy. He's been shot. He's been shot. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's the man with a gun. No question about it. Oswald has been shot.
Nightclub owner Jack Ruby shoots and fatally wounds Lee Harvey Oswald, Kennedy's accused assassin, in the Dallas County Jail. 1859. British naturalist Charles Darwin publishes On the Origin of Species, explaining his theory of evolution. 1971. The hijacker known as D.B. Cooper parachutes from a Northwest Airlines 727 over Washington State with $200,000 in ransom money. His fate remains unknown to this day. And 1991. In London, rock singer Freddie Mercury, frontman of the group Queen, dies of AIDS-related pneumonia. He was 45. Today in history, November 24th, Tim McGuire, The Associated Press.
Let's continue the 1124 news purge, my friends, and move into media and memes with a fascinating piece from ScienceDaily.com. Ignorance is bliss when it comes to challenging social issues. The less people know about important complex issues such as the economy, energy consumption, and the environment, the more they want to avoid becoming well-informed, according to new research published by the American Psychological Association. And the more urgent the issue, the more people want to remain unaware, according to a paper published online in the APA's Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. These studies were designed to help understand the so-called ignorance is bliss approach to social issues, said author Stephen Shepard, graduate student with the University of Waterloo in Ontario. The findings can assist educators in addressing significant barriers to getting people involved and engaged in social issues. It goes on to note that the more pressing or urgent the issue, the more the urge to run away. Shifting gears, but still within our media memes, Netflix shares hit their lowest in over a year, which we are tracking amongst many, many other things on twitter.com/navigateNetflix. And if we have time, we'll go over some of the recent films and documentaries and other media on Navigate Netflix. We note time and time again what we're essentially doing is data mining and looking through the media and the current events and the pop culture and putting things together and showing you a different kind of subtext and context. I've never been one to subscribe to the unified field conspiracy theory that there's one family that controls it all. It's essentially multi-generational serial killers, and I take that phrase from my man Richard Grove at tragedyandhope.com. Battling for turf like gangsters. But we see the copycat effect. We see the recurring themes and memes and simulations and repeats, as we note in today in history, repeats itself. So, again, as always, keep all of that in mind on this Black Friday. But continuing our media memes, cursing baby doll upsets parents.
Hi, once again, everyone, and welcome back this Tuesday, November 15th.
Thanks for choosing Pro News 7 tonight. With Christmas just 6 weeks away, a lot of us parents will be hitting the toy stores to buy the hottest and most popular new toys on the shelves.
But what if one of them were a talking toy and it had a word in its vocabulary that you objected to? One doll that's on those shelves very well might. Pro News 7's Matt Hamilton joins us with more. Matt?
Lisa, Jay, while the voice is in baby talk, some think if you listen closely enough, you can hear the word in question. But now, you can decide and listen.
Your mother's fucking father, shit. Fuck you!
Did you or did you not hear what some parents think is being said?
The doll appears to be cursing.
And Casey Jesko says with two young daughters, she doesn't want any kind of toy like the You and Me doll in her house.
Not only the subliminal part of it, but the repetitive part of my two-year-old, because she repeats everything. So I certainly don't need a doll teaching her bad language.
However, since it's in a baby talk, it is now up to the manufacturer to make the decision about recalling the doll in question.
It's a manufacturer's issue. Apparently, the manufacturer has a problem with this specific doll or this batch of dolls, and if they issue a recall, then the stores do abide by that recall notice.
I was hearing that last curse word pretty quick. That's what I thought, but I thought surely that couldn't be right.
It's because of that uncertainty that Casey says you need to research your child's toys before you buy them.
I would recommend that all parents obviously test out all the toys. If it's not working on the shelf so you can't test it properly, then make sure you make the manager get you one that does have a proper try me button, because that would obviously be something you'd want to know before.
And Keel agrees with that sentiment, saying you should research and read reviews ahead of time, as well as check into the company and make sure it has a good rating. You be the judge.
Another thing Keel stressed was the importance of holding onto your receipt and knowing the store's return and refund policies up front so that you're protected. Jay, Lisa, back to you.
Now, we grab the print version of this from KPTV ClickToHouston.com, and they note in the headline, cursing baby doll upsets parents. Toy appears to be saying, hey, crazy bitch. But that news clip obviously went for the dirtier parts of apparently what that cursing baby doll is playing. Finally, on our media and memes, an obituary note, itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini, Catch a Falling Star, and many other songs written by Lee Pockris. He has passed away, and we can get more from the BBC. He was 87. Perry Como released a hit version of Catch a Falling Star in 1957, winning the singer a Grammy Award. Perry Como singing the Lee Pockris written Catch a Falling Star.
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket, never let it fade away. Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket, save it for a rainy day. For love may come and tap you on the shoulder some starless night, just in case you feel you wanna hold her. You'll have a pocket full of starlight. Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Never let it fade away. Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Save it for a rainy day. For love may come and tap you on the shoulder some starless night. And just in case you feel you want to hold her, you'll have a pocket full of starlight.
Pocket full of starlight.
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Never let it fade away.
Never let it fade away.
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Save it for a rainy day. For when your troubles start multiplying, and they just might, it's easy to forget them without trying. With just a pocket full of starlight, catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Never let it fade away. Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Save it for a rainy day.
Save it for a rainy day.
Save it for a rainy day.
What other radio show plays Perry Como and M83 while discussing deep politics and Black Friday? It's MediaMonarchy.com, my friends. We're well into hour number two of this jam-packed episode 240. Black Friday, November 25th, 2011. I'm James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, and that was the aforementioned Perry Como singing Catch a Falling Star from 1957, written by now the deceased Pacris. Something we reported last week, as we saw in the breaking news during the live episode 239, is the top of our murder and mayhem updates. HollywoodMemoir.com getting into the Natalie Wood death case to be reopened, and the yacht captain blames Robert Wagner. Meanwhile, from CopycatEffect.com, suicides linked to Penn State. Dev Myers of the Pittsburgh History Examiner has written an item entitled Another Suicide at Penn State on November 17th, and it connects to law firms investigating the Penn State sex scandal, which obviously connects to the larger elite child pedophile trafficking rings. And we noted many, many times as this scandal was breaking on Twitter and on the website and on this radio show that stop being shocked about the Penn State scandal and learn about the Franklin scandal. And we've noted the destruction of all our institutions now seems to be happening at an accelerated pace. So when you can't believe in church and you can't believe in the bank and you can't believe in your sport, they'll be ready to offer you the solution. And we've noticed the meme of the destruction of sports. OSU coaches die in plane crash. That's from ABC News. From MSNBC, Florida A&M band director fired after suspected hazing death. Meanwhile, Greg Hallman, Seattle Mariners outfielder, stabbed to death in his native Netherlands at the age of 24. Garrett Eukman, Arkansas Razorbacks tight end, dead at the age of 19 for unknown reasons. Meanwhile, the UC Berkeley student killed by police in an Occupy situation was a motivational speaker. More on that from the Los Angeles Times. Father sought for the murder in a New Jersey toddler's drowning. That's from the Associated Press. Suspects in Arizona most likely to die during arrests. That from allgov.com. Meanwhile, in Arizona, plane with six aboard crashes east of Phoenix. Authorities arrest seven Ohio men on federal hate crime charges in Amish beard-cutting attacks. We reported for you the bizarre hair-cutting attacks in the Amish world several weeks ago for you in our Murder and Mayhem updates. Our one bit of posted chaos bit surrounding Black Friday goes to twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. Customers describe scene of chaos after woman attacks with pepper spray at a Los Angeles Walmart. Competitive shopping is the euphemism. And that was before we had even seen the updates about shots fired and armed robberies. All to get your China-made baubles. To help you forget that everything you thought was real is a lie and is being pulled out from under you. Hey, but you can play Call of Duty. Our last murder and mayhem note, and there is a video, but we're not going to play it, from the Deutsche Press Agency. Georgia nail salon wilding brawl seriously injures a teenager. Wilding is the term they use in this Deutsche Press article. That is a term we heard back in the 80s and 90s when minorities go wild. watch to see that meme return as we seem to be hurtling towards what the sinister forces of Charles Manson and the underworld wanted, was a race war to destroy this country. But I digress. Let's get our Obamasiya updates as he issues his first commutation of sentence. Eugenia Jennings of Illinois has become the first person to receive a commutation of sentence from Obama. Jennings was convicted in 2001 of selling 13.9 grams of crack cocaine to a police informant and was sentenced to 22 years in prison. Obama decided to commute her sentence down to 10 years, allowing her to be released next month. Julie Stewart, president of Families Against Mandatory Minimums, called Jennings' original sentence overkill for a nonviolent drug offense. And those are the two sides of the faces that the Obamasiya speaks out of when it comes to the continuation of the drug war. We'll ask the question again from ChicagoNow.com. Who is Oscar Ortega Hernandez and why did he allegedly try to kill Obama? I have found anytime I've mentioned this to friends or coworkers, they never heard of this story. He allegedly took shots with a high-powered rifle from Constitution Avenue, no small feat. He had been picked up earlier in the day and let go, and he was picked up after these alleged shots, but he was missing from Idaho Falls, Idaho, and his family reported him missing right around this weird terrorism drill. We shift gears to finish out our Obamasiya updates as we take it from spin.com, and that is, I'll admit to you, the one magazine I've subscribed to forever and probably have every issue back to 1993, but my own collector, obsessive media-ness aside. The Roots have famously underscored a few choice Late Night with Jimmy Fallon guest appearances with clever walk-on music, The Roots being the house band of the Jimmy Fallon show. When Ashley Simpson, remember the Saturday Night Live lip-sync debacle, she appeared on the show, they played Milli Vanilli. What made this classic was the fact that blah, 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 blah. Michelle Bachman, she entered a couple of nights ago, and The Roots played a song that no one was really going to know what it was. However, they did, and the update came out, and the accusations and harassments began to fly. But as Michelle Bachman came out, The Roots played a version of a song from Fishbone called Lion Ass Bitch.
Too strong, but that little slut just proved. lying piece of sack of shit, slut trash can, scummiest dirtbag, bitch!
The legendary Fishbone, Lioness Bitch, that was what the Roots played when Michelle Bachmann came out on the Jimmy Fallon Show, and of course she has received her now requisite apology. Continuing down the news purge, we reach Oregon oddities, and again, the memes, the death penalty. With regret for allowing past executions, Oregon Governor Kitzhaber bans death penalty for the rest of his term. That's from the Washington Post and an op-ed from StatesmanJournal.com, halting Oregon execution, a bold political move. Speaking of bold political moves, we reach police state updates, and you have, by no doubt, seen the UC Davis cop pepper spraying the passive protesters. As so many things in the interwebs do, they repeat themselves and become little propagating viral things that I get a kick out of. So the meme became putting the pepper spray cop in historical and otherwise noteworthy photos, such as pepper spraying the signing of the Declaration of Independence, or pepper spraying... No, I forget. Oh, the Sunday in the Park, the Monet painting, spraying the woman in the face. My man, Brian, in St. Charles, sent me one that he liked and I liked as well, and we posted the photo up. It's the pepper spray cop spraying the wizard, well, the Tin Man, the Lion, Dorothy, and the Straw Man. Are those their names? Drawing a blank on the Frank L. Baum mythology there. However, I digress, and what I want to note is that time now, ladies and gentlemen, to say hello to the Pepper Spray Cop on Twitter. Twitter.com/Pepper Spray Cop. It was only a matter of time when I saw the account pop up and we go, oh, damn, I should have thought of that. As we've noted here, I am a fan of the sort of ghost tweet accounts of fictional or otherwise characters. Let's get our last couple of police state update notes from the New York Times. Airport screening is still a pain, flyers complain. This goes back to November 21st, and I saw it in the print, and there was one bit that struck me, and we'll get to it. The lines will still be long, and the screening still invasive at the airport checkpoints this Thanksgiving. While the government has made some changes to security procedures, many passengers and travel executives contend that the moves do not go far enough. Since last November, the Transportation Security Administration has adopted a policy to reduce pat-downs of children under 12, altered some body scanners to display a generic outline of a human figure, and begun testing programs that offer expedited screening to pilots and select frequent flyers. Still, some travelers are bothered by a screening process that has become increasingly time-consuming and intimate, and industry representatives say they're worried that these frustrations are contributing to a decline in air travel. The Air Transport Association expects 2% fewer people will fly this Thanksgiving compared with last year, while AAA projects a 4% increase in automobile travel. And here we get it. As the TSA observes its 10th anniversary, it also faces lawsuits over the legality of its passenger searches, growing scrutiny of the cost-effectiveness of its screening measures, questions about security lapses, and complaints that some agents continue to make travelers feel humiliated or harassed. Submit, slave. Threat Level posted an interesting one. 9 reasons Wired readers should wear tinfoil hats. Threat Level being one of the blogs on Wired.com. And these 9 reasons are, of course, warrantless wiretapping, warrantless GPS tracking, tracking devices in your pocket, fake cell phone towers, the border exception, the 6 months and it's the government's rule, the Patriot Act, government malware, and that Rumsfeldian phrase, known unknowns. Finally, on our police state updates, and this 1124 news purge won't start revolutions, but we're giving it a whirl. Vast surveillance system tracks everyone driving around the District of Criminals. We learned this from the Washington Post in their innocuously enough titled article, "License Plate Readers, a Useful Tool for Police, Comes with Privacy Concerns." Let's shift now, my friends, to all the other sites in the growing media monarchy kingdom, and we will begin the day after Food Day on foodworldorder.com. Food costs soar as Thanksgiving loomed, diners eating the cost of inflation, shoppers feeling the pinch of higher food prices at the supermarket, and most consumers are convinced they will be shelling out even more cash for groceries next year. Prices keep going up. And we can continue that with another post, but the same story. This from KFGO, food prices continue to climb to record highs during the holiday season.
It's almost Thanksgiving Day, and this year your mashed potatoes, your pumpkin pie, and even your turkey are going to cost more than ever. About 22% more than 2010, according to the American Farm Bureau.
Price increases are the largest gains in two decades, as prices have risen in everything from turkey to potatoes to cranberries. According to the study, the price of a 16-pound turkey went up from $17.66 to $21.57, an increase of 22%.
It's affected things. We're shopping a lot more carefully.
Okay.
A lot more carefully.
The study found a new average cost of a meal for 10 people is $49.20, up 13% from $43.47. This is the largest increase since 1990. Over the past 5 years, food prices have seen price hikes over 100% in some cases here locally. A 5-pound bag of Pillsbury flour has gone up 128% since April of 2006, from $1.35 to $3.09. A 5-pound bag of American Crystal sugar up 67% since 2006, from $1.79 to $3. 18-count Grade A store brand eggs, they're up 144% since July of 2006, from 94 cents to $2.29. The recent surge in food prices have factored from energy costs, global demand, commodity prices, and weather. In addition to Thanksgiving fare, shoppers are seeing record prices in ground beef, bread, pork, and cheese. Jason Spies with KFGO and KFGO.com.
And never, of course, reminding people that it's mostly because your dollar is also worth less. So we'll wrap up all our other related holiday Thanksgiving-related food prices with a quick and dirty 1124 binge and purge on foodworldorder.com. The high cost of high prices, with another study saying Thanksgiving to cost more.
Dollars and cents time. The cost of your Thanksgiving meal is up significantly over last year, so you might want to look for ways to economize if you haven't done your shopping yet. Fox Toledo's Kevin Milliken is live. What others are doing, spring spending.
The American Farm Bureau Federation puts out a report every year on the cost of a typical Thanksgiving meal for 10 people. Increases in feed corn and diesel fuel prices are driving up the price of Turkey Day by double digits.
Customers are carefully cramming their carts, knowing Thanksgiving will cost more this year.
Oh, heck yes. Heck yes. Everything. Everything's more.
The average Thanksgiving meal last year jumped just 50 cents to more than $43. But the 2011 Turkey Day will top $49, a 13% increase. Bigger bucks for the bird is the bulk of it. Local grocers are willing to take a loss on the turkey, hoping to make their profit elsewhere. So there are deals if you shop poultry for the price. One woman will save $10 on a bird of a different feather, chicken.
Better price on it. And the kids said, let's try that this year for a change.
Another shopper says she'll save $15 by making desserts from scratch instead of buying pre-made pumpkin pie.
Well, it's debatable. You have the time versus money thing.
Most will economize by dividing up duties and the cost.
Kind of like a potluck Thanksgiving. We all separate who needs to bring what, who brings the desserts, who brings the side dishes, who brings the turkey, and it works out really well for us.
But a lot of restaurants, especially buffets, do a booming business on Thanksgiving. A lot of folks simply prefer to stay close to home, let someone else cook, and save time, money, and gas. Reporting live, Kevin Milliken, Fox Toledo News.
Meanwhile, from our own Oregonian, Oregon Food Bank raises more than $500,000 at a recent gala. The AP has raw video of the Obamasiah visiting a food bank. KGW, again out of Oregon, reporting food banks low for the Thanksgiving crunch. And we wrap up this 1124 Binge and Purge, the high cost of high prices, with, again, food banks asking for their final donations.
Well, Thanksgiving now just a couple of days away, and a lot of donations are still needed for dinner tables across the state. The Connecticut Food Bank has been making a plea for help. News 8's Aaron Cox on the scene with more in East Haven.
They got a lot of last-minute donations of turkeys here at the Connecticut Food Bank, and it all certainly helps, but still, it isn't enough. It's a truckload of turkeys, and it's just in time. Over 200 arriving at the Connecticut Food Bank. They'll be back out the door within minutes. It's a mad dash to get dinner fixins out to food pantries and churches.
Today is rush. Very rushed.
Folks from New Haven's Bethel AME Church are here loading up the stuffing, the potatoes, the vegetables, and some three dozen frozen turkeys. The donations will be divided up into baskets for families, but the church can't give a turkey to everyone on its list.
It's definitely not enough. There are sometimes as many as 100 people that come for food, and we don't like to turn anybody away. We don't have enough turkeys, but we do give all that we have.
So they get a little creative so everyone has something to call dinner on Thanksgiving.
It's a hard thing to tell them, but we still try to substitute something from there.
One thing is for sure, every donated turkey will end up on a Thanksgiving table. Reporting on the scene in East Haven, I'm Erin Cox, News 8.
BPA levels soar after eating canned soup. Soaring BPA levels found in people who eat canned foods. We have reports from CBS and Fox and more. Talk about stirring up controversy. Ha ha ha, it's so punny. A new study shows that the urine of people who consume canned soup can contain surprisingly high levels of bisphenol A, BPA, a hormone-disrupting compound linked to health problems including heart disease, diabetes, and obesity. The study was published online November 21st in the Journal of the American Medical Association, but they are not giving up the full study for free. Continuing on, foodworldorder.com from independent.co.uk, famine risk recedes as aid gets through to Somalia, though thousands still face imminent starvation. Conditions for those affected by famine in Somalia have improved dramatically and unexpectedly in recent weeks, with the number of people now at imminent risk of starvation falling by two-thirds, according to the United Nations. Food agencies have downgraded the famine risk in half the regions in Somalia's disaster zone. This is believed to be the result of an international aid effort and greater access to the affected area. The Islamic insurgent group Al-Shabaab has allowed agencies into the territory it controls. At one point, 750,000 people were estimated to be facing imminent starvation. That number has now fallen to 250,000, says the United Nations. I find it interesting that the Islamic insurgent group is also being given some credit. We return to the States and the Associated Press as the setup for our final Food World Order article. The USDA targets stores in food stamp trafficking. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is upgrading technology used to combat a swindle of the nation's $64.7 billion food stamp program that diverts as much as $330 million annually. The agency last month awarded a 10-year contract worth up to $25 million to a Fairfax, Virginia company, SRA International Incorporated, to improve monitoring of electronic food stamp transactions. In all, 45 million people use the stamps to buy food from 234,000 retailers. The goal is to decrease food stamp trafficking, where retailers trade customers lesser amounts of cash for stamps. Authorities say the stamps are then redeemed, as usual, by merchants at face value, netting them huge profits. The practice is a federal criminal offense. Authorities say the crime has brought 597 convictions nationwide and recovery of $197.4 million since 2008. The related update from ABC News: fake food stamp websites scam the poor. Which leads us to our final Food World Order story, and it was our final story on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Oregon tops the nation in food stamp use.
Oregon has the highest percentage of people on food stamps in the nation. A newly released U.S. Census survey reports 18% of Oregonians said they rely on a federal program for food.
Food stamp use in Oregon surged 23% last year and has doubled in the past 4 years. Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, says people can't get out of the cycle because of lower wages and continuing unemployment.
If you have a family of three or four, and if you were getting $17, $18 an hour, but now you're only making $10 to $12 at a new job, so even if you are employed, you're going to be eligible for the food stamp benefits.
In Eugene, 82,000 people used SNAP last month. The state received an award from the Department of Human Services for providing the easiest access to food stamps.
So is that last sentence there the answer to why are so many people in Oregon on food stamps? Is it because it's really easy to get on them? Without diving any further into that whole sticky wicket, we're going to get to holyhexes.com, our site covering the occult and religion in society, where we begin with another question still concerning our Black Friday Thanksgiving celebrations. The Religious News Service, RNS, asks, was Thanksgiving a religious celebration? If you want to prepare for Thanksgiving like a real pilgrim, here's what you should do. Cancel the plane reservations, stop jotting down recipes, and leave the libations alone. For the pilgrims and Puritans, Thanksgiving days were spontaneous and sober affairs. When friends arrived from overseas, European Protestants defeated Catholics in battle, or a bumper crop was reaped, the pilgrims dedicated a day to thanking divine providence. They would have considered it presumptuous to schedule a Thanksgiving Day in advance, said Francis Beamer, an emeritus professor of history at Millersville University in Pennsylvania. Quote, it assumes that God is going to be good to you each particular year. I like that. Let's return to our coverage of the growing Penn State scandal. McQuarrie testimony points toward Penn State scandal's outcome. The outcome of the Penn State's pedophile scandal will hinge on assistant coach Michael McQuarrie's testimony. Will McQuarrie do the right thing, or is it too dangerous? A Pittsburgh Tribune Review article, Penn State's Mike McQuarrie goes from leader to outcast, provides a grim foreshadowing of how the scandal will likely pan out and play out and pan out. McQuarrie, who spends much of his time now behind closed doors at home, will greatly influence any court decision when he takes the witness stand. According to the article, McQuarrie is both star witness, the only known witness capable of testifying in the child sex case, and a polarizing figure for what he did or did not see and what he did or did not do. He has received multiple threats. A Mark Madden article gets further into McQuarrie, and we add one amazing update this morning from SACBee.com, the Sacramento Bee, and we, of course, tweeted this out. Ex-FBI Director Louis Freeh named special counsel for Penn State investigations. If you recall, Michael Rupert confronting the feds about their drug running. It's Louis Freeh fidgeting and playing with his hands uncomfortably. And that's just one of the numerous shady events he is involved with. That's why we provide you his Wikipedia page. But we're continuing Holy Hexes as we get the rest of the pedophile network updates, current and past. The child abuse scandal at Pennsylvania State University proves that pedophilia isn't just a priest problem. And a Belfast Telegraph article reported on the Pope's controversial remarks in a 2010 Christmas address to cardinals and officials in Rome, made by Joey Ratz, noting, quote, pedophilia wasn't considered an absolute evil as recently as the 1970s, also claimed that child pornography was increasingly considered normal by society. Meanwhile, from the French agency press, Denmark to allow same-sex weddings in church. Danish homosexuals will be allowed to marry in the state evangelical Lutheran church. Denmark's gender equality and ecclesiastical affairs minister said Wednesday, the Danish government has decided that same-sex couples are to be able to marry in church on equal terms with heterosexual couples and that they will be able to call themselves spouses. We expect to celebrate the first marriage next summer. Meanwhile, on Holy Hexes, a breakdown on the Necromantic Ritual book by Leela Wendell. And the Oregon commentator gets into the show to catch a predator. I wish we had further time to get into it. The other last article on holyhexes.com. Henry James in The Turn of the Screw. Is the governess a reliable witness or totally insane? These are some of the amazing sinister forces that you can get into on holyhexes.com. We move quickly now to cyberspacewar.com and begin with a Gary McKinnon update. Renewed hope for the UK hacking trial. A judicial review of celebrated hacker Gary McKinnon's lengthy extradition proceedings were conducted fairly, according to an article at the Register. Nonetheless, McKinnon's mother, Janice Sharp, sees hope in Dominic Grieve, the present UK Attorney General. He's always insisted that Gary should be tried in the UK and that the forum should be brought into use by our judges in extradition cases. What did McKinnon see on Pentagon computers? He said he was looking for alien stuff, but he's also a well-known 9/11 truther. Zero hour approached for Phobos Grunt. What could be the most ambitious Mars mission in history could have been doomed to failure within 24 hours. That was from the Examiner, but we have the update for you. First contact with Phobos Grunt since November 8th. A Perth, Australia tracking station made contact with the errant Phobos Grunt spacecraft. A Universe Today article reports actions of the tracking station. The ESA, the European Space Agency, sent a press release that the signal sent to Phobos Grunt commanded the spacecraft's transmitter to switch on, sending a signal down to the station's antenna. Data received from Phobos Grunt were then transmitted from Perth to Russian mission controllers via ESA's Space Operations Center in Germany for analysis. And the final extrapolation on this story, with a headline from Fox, actual race to Mars could begin tomorrow, November 26th. It's a grueling marathon, only this time the finish line is the red planet, and the race takes place at 70,000 miles per hour. NASA's newest Mars rover is scheduled for launch Saturday. Curiosity should arrive at the red planet's mineral-rich Gale crater next August after a 354-million-mile, 8.5-month voyage aboard an Atlas V rocket. Meanwhile, the European Space Agency received that first signal from the unmanned Russian spacecraft known as Phobos Grunt. And we ask, who will reach Mars first?
NASA scientists claim the search for life on Mars will take a step forward with the launch of its newest rover on Saturday. The vehicle, named Curiosity, is equipped with tools that can allow the robotic device to drill into rock and collect samples. Curiosity is expected to land on the red planet in August 2012.
A quick note of weekend weird news. Alien coneheads or abnormalities is the latest Peruvian discovery, an ancient skull, or is it progeria? The idea of super soldiers at their very core suggests the desire to replace human beings. And it's all in The Men Who Stare at Goats, Project Camelot interviews, and it all gets into transhumanism. Chinese space program animation set to America the Beautiful. A Universe Today article gives us nice coverage of China's ambitious space program with two manned flights planned for 2012. The animation is perhaps of greater interest to Americans, which curiously simulated docking set to the song America the Beautiful. Our last couple of stories on this jam-packed whirlwind, Seat of the Pants, episode 240 from MediaMonarchy.com, gets to a story that, again, I bet you did not hear anywhere else. And hopefully that's what keeps you coming back to Media Monarchy, as again we note who else plays Fishbone and Perry Como and discusses Black Friday, and this... Cyber attack reported on Illinois water plant. A Washington Post article reports, quote, foreign hackers caused a pump at an Illinois water plant to fail last week, end quote. The FBI and Homeland Security were investigating the Springfield, Illinois incident. In an interesting note, the article adds, news of the incident became public after Joe Weiss, an industry security expert, obtained a report dated November 10th and collected by an Illinois State Intelligence Center that monitors security threats. The original source of the information was unknown and impossible to immediately verify. The report blamed the damage on the actions of somebody using a computer registered to an internet address in Russia. If confirmed, would be the first known to have damaged one of the systems that supply Americans with water and electricity. or the first acknowledged attack resulting in physical damage to our critical infrastructure. Readers should, of course, remain wary of a report based on an unknown source that is impossible to verify. There's more from ABC News, the aforementioned Washington Post, and, of course, my friends, the update. Feds deny water utility hack. DHS and FBI dismiss foreign cyber attack as the cause of the Illinois utility water pump failure, reports TGDaily.com, because the alphabet agencies conclude there's no evidence to support the earlier claims.
Foreign hackers have launched a cyber attack on the water supply of Illinois State Capitol Springfield. WMAQ has more.
Russian cyber hackers may be to blame for an attack on a water plant there. Workers say they noticed glitches over the past 2 months before the water pump burned out. They determined their computers had been hacked. Homeland Security now investigating. It could be the first cyber attack on an American water supply.
A writer for the Register spoke to Joe Weiss, a managing partner for cybersecurity company Applied Control Solutions, about how and why the attack happened on a water supply. Weiss said the breach was most likely performed after the attackers hacked into the maker of the supervisory control and data acquisition software used by the utility and stole usernames and passwords belonging to the manufacturer's customers. The full motive for the attacks is still unclear, but the Daily Mail writes that this method seems similar to one cyber attackers used in China. The method used, hacking a security company to gain entry to another company, was employed earlier this year by cyber attackers in China. They stole data from RSA, a division of EMC that provides secure remote computer access to government agencies. Security experts say the attacks show just how vulnerable companies and utilities are. Still, the Department of Homeland Security is hesitant to point the finger at Russia. A writer for Digital Trends says finding out who did it isn't as easy as finding an IP address. The attack appears to have been launched from an IP address located in Russia, though it's possible that the hacker or hackers who waged the attack are physically located elsewhere and simply waged a proxy attack to make it appear as though Russia was the base of operations. Director of Security Research for McAfee Labs, Dave Marcus, tells the Washington Post that the United States is, quote, vulnerable to these kind of attacks. Marcus said that the computers that control critical systems in the United States are vulnerable to attacks that come through the Internet, and few operators of these systems know how to detect or defeat these threats, so many are ill-prepared for cyber attacks, Marcus said. SlashGear reports it's still unclear how many remote access credentials have been stolen. For Newsy, I'm Christy Lewis. Multiple sources, the real story.
Newsy being one of the few places I could find covering this story, that now the feds deny the water utility hack in Springfield, Illinois. There doesn't exist a clear trail that can be documented to prove a cyber attack or where it originated. However, we can tell, and it's clear from the articles and the sources, that the utility suffered intrusions, quote unquote. Our final post on cyberspacewar.com. Attention, holiday shoppers! We are tracking your cell phone signal. Two U.S. malls will track customers through cell phone surveillance beginning today, Black Friday, November 25th, 2011. The Promenade Mall in Temecula, California, and the Short Pump Town Center in Richmond, Virginia, will track guests' movements by monitoring the signals from their cell phones, according to Cryptogon.com. The article maintains it's the first time cell phones will be used to track customers. And we ask the question, as we should ask about everything we've heard and seen and experienced here, do you believe it? That's everything from Cyberspace War, Holy Hexes, Food World Order, and MediaMonarchy.com. Jam-packed all within the Media Monarchy Kingdom. Let's briefly glance at two of my newer and favorite outlets, Twitter.com/NavigateNetflix. NavigatingNetflix.com is the series from TragedyAndHope.com and Media Monarchy, breaking down films worth seeing, media worth consuming. I've been using the Twitter.com/NavigateNetflix feed to tweet about and bring attention to some of the worthwhile things that you can watch instantly on Netflix. Some amazing, some diversionary. But we have Nightmares in Red, White, and Blue, a look at the history of the American horror film, which was pretty fascinating. We also have Candyman, the David Klein story, documentary from 2010 by Costa Boats, documents the rise and fall of this oddball genius, the creator of Jelly Belly Jelly Beans. Interestingly enough, my friends, because I tweeted about the movie, Twitter.com/www.candyinvento, the Candyman is now following Navigate Netflix and tweeting about us. He invented Jelly Bellies. I actually watched the Pearl Jam documentary. It's directed by Cameron Crowe. Pearl Jam 20, PJ 20, celebrating their 20 years using 1,200 hours of film, capturing the band from all perspectives. I've never really been a huge fan of theirs. Of course, the first tape did a lot for me when my brother brought it back from college, along with tape dubs of Smashing Pumpkins and School of Fish and Nirvana and others. But I always thought they were really boring. The film is, of course, well done, Cameron Crowe, high quality, and it is worth checking out. I just wish somebody had the money and the wherewithal to do a big, amazing documentary about the 20th anniversary of my favorite band, Sloan. Finally, a film called If a Tree Falls, a story of the Earth Liberation Front, directed by Marshall Curry, taking place essentially here in the Pacific Northwest, and all the events surrounding Earth First and the Earth Liberation Front in the 90s and the 2000s here in the Pacific Northwest. Economic sabotage? I believe that film is one of two Oregon-made films that are on the short list of films that could be nominated for an Oscar documentary. So those are some of the things worth noting on twitter.com/NavigateNetflix, and we look over if Navigate Netflix is our media and film focused Twitter feed. Pump Up the Volume is our music dedicated Twitter feed, and we noted the 20th anniversary of the death of Freddie Mercury. We of course noted The Roots and Fishbone and Michelle Bachman. But we also have Song of the Day tweets coming from The Current out of Minnesota Public Radio and KEXP out of Seattle. Song of the Day, a new song every day, keeping you hip, super easy. We also note new releases from Everyday Music at Everyday Music One, which is an independent record store chain here in Oregon. And they note, and I had kind of thought about it, it had been a little while. I like to go to the record store on my way home from the show, but I can't do it all the time. And I kind of thought, well, it's Black Friday. No, I shouldn't really go shopping on Black Friday. I should totally avoid it. But I kind of want to go to the record store. And then I saw November 25th is Record Store Day, Black Friday. Indie-only collectible releases, most on Pretty Pretty Vinyl and other limited edition things from recordstoreday.com. So I thought, hell with Buy Nothing Day. If we're going to fix any of this stuff, we're going to have to give money to things we find worthwhile. And hopefully, my friends, you find this show worthwhile. And I will implore you to hit the donate button as we approach the holidays, as so many things become due and need to be fixed. Obviously, this crappy microphone I've been using throughout this episode, and I appreciate your time and patience and spending your mind time with me. I love you guys, and I love doing this for you, because it helps me. We're going to go out with a song that I know has been around for the better part of the last year or so. It kind of escaped me, but once I heard it, I was really surprised that it didn't become some kind of rallying cry for the Occupy movements. So we'll call it here and put it here, and you can tag it to Occupy or Black Friday or any way you want. It fits in the tantrums. Money Grabber. But this has been the jam-packed Seat of the Pants Little Ramshackle episode 240 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's Black Friday, November 25th, 2011, and my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, broadcasting live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And, of course, huge thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net. And as we always close these shows, my friends, and especially on days like today, we remind you, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care. Come back anytime. You already run me dry.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.